listening to Who You Know. Today I'm sharing a couple of readings from Tangible Books. Last week it was, what day was it? Thursday, last week. First we got Crystal McHale reading a story about her first high school boyfriend. And then I read a piece from a work in progress about my love of dust jackets. Hope you enjoy.
So our next reader is going to be Crystal.
All right.
I haven't done a reading in 15 years, so. This is a story of teenage love called Bucket of Pig's Blood. He was a buck 50 soaking wet with tightly coiled dishwater frizz and a computer screen pizza complexion. Possessing a razor's wit that could slice through any meat-headed athlete's meanness and cut a few teachers down too, just for his own amusement. But it was Devin's intelligence and cynicism that were attractive to me. And being the first girl to take interest in him was probably where his interest in me came from. There is very little sentimentality to it all. I had already been repressing my feelings as a survival strategy since puberty, and I'm not exactly sure if teenage boys have feelings at all. From drafting classes to drama club, our hobbies overlapped and we find ourselves lingering at lockers and sharing bus seats on architecture field trips. The next progression was logically discussing a partnership. You see, the social pressures and hormones made being a virgin exhausting. And we were both ready to get that milestone of maturity over with. So after much debating, which some might consider flirting, we consented to exploring each other physically as boyfriend and girlfriend. The real challenge was figuring out where and when the act would take place. Devin was on a short parental leash, atoning for his older brother's out-of-wedlock sins, and I was a latchkey kid from a freshly divorced home. So it was under the cover of after-school activities where we would converge for our experiments. In drama club, Devin had an onstage presence while I was more comfortable behind the curtains. Prop manager for all the high school productions, I had been entrusted with keys to the theater storage room. Student couples desiring alone time during school hours would offer me a few dollars to grant them access to the privacy of a repository of sets and costumes. So this naturally seemed like the place where we should begin our carnal research. We didn't turn on the lights as darkness partially removed the insecurity of developing bodies, allowing faint silhouettes to lead the way. In the far back, behind a giant cardboard and latex puppet of Audrey II from the sophomore rendition of Little Shop of Horrors, I got my first kiss. And it was disgusting. Devin placed his hands on the slight curve of my frame, an organic position for kids at school dances, awkwardly leaning in and squeezing her eyes shut out of fear because I did not want to see the close-up of blonde eyelashes and clusters of whiteheads. Instead, I imagined what his skull looked like. Somehow this was more comforting, envisioning large teeth gnashing under chapped lips while he obscenely flicked his tongue like a goat in heat. During pep rallies, all students were required to file into the gym for whatever sports team. Skipping meant detention, so not getting caught became an art form for Devin and I. The audiovisual office and library connected through a narrow corridor that was rarely used, and we'd linger on our respective extracurriculums until the halls and classrooms emptied for school spirit, rejoining behind the file cabinets in the archive room. Devin finally managed to unhook my bra and pushed my sweater around my neck. Falling to my knees, he buried his face in my flat chest. This act was not softened in the darkness like our other encounters. It was repugnantly sharpened with the harsh fluorescent lights overhead. All I could do was stand there and look down at this pimply man boy making out with my boobs, occasionally looking around to make sure no one caught us. We carried on like this for almost a full school year without really getting anywhere satisfying. Once the school production of Bye Bye Birdie had wrapped up, Devin asked me to sit in my car at the cast after party. But instead of the usual slobber and grope routine, he told me that we should probably just move on. Detailing his plans to join the Air Force after graduating, how he was looking forward to baseball season, and also wanting to take someone else to his senior prom. Mm. Falling victim to teenage politics, Devin was becoming someone I didn't recognize anymore. We were just different enough to stay sober to the fact that this was never meant to be happily ever after. I didn't love him any more than he loved me. Educational funding cuts in our rural county led to smaller districts shuttering their doors halfway through the school year. Students were bused in from little farm towns and integrated into our district right after spring break. A popular senior from one of the closed schools started taking my art class as a throwaway credit before graduation. Not really knowing me as an awkward loner, he took interest in the sullen girl drawing in the corner, Adam. Short and stocky and charismatic, wrapped in Hilfiger logos and Nike swooshes. His social rung didn't give the time of day to my rung, and yet, here he was pushing small talk. Adam would try to engage me regularly, and it felt like a practical joke. I kept waiting for the bucket of pig's blood to drop, but his persistence and charm seemed sincere, so I let him in. Adam pulled up to my house in a white Ford Bronco on a cold weeknight, ready to meet my absent mother. With no adult supervision present, an immediate invitation was extended to indulge in the traditional rural teenage pastime of driving around aimlessly on gravel roads, all under the pretense of listening to music and smoking cigarettes. I knew what that meant. Here, at last, was my opportunity to accomplish what Devin and I couldn't. Stripped, prodded, and slobbered on in the stifling musk of cool water, it was all over a quarter of the way through the Prince song, Pussy Control. That's a 6-minute long song. In the morning, I discovered seatbelt buckle-shaped bruises, and that Adam and another student had a bet going about whether or not he could get me in bed. $50 richer, Adam never spoke to me again. Bucket of pig's blood. A week before Devin graduated, he confessed to me that he was unsuccessful in losing his virginity. I'm sure he had heard the rumors about Adam's bet, but when he asked if I had any luck, I lied. He didn't want to go off to college with no experience and propositioned me as a last-ditch effort. How flattering. There was a sad desperation in his pockmarked face, and with no feelings, I agreed. We cut class, and I drove us 40 minutes out to the empty farmhouse my mother just bought. And there on the kitchen floor, Devin became a man, and it was as horribly awkward as one could imagine. Sparse, clear body hair and the smell of his skin turned my stomach, but I only told him it was fun. And we both shared a cigarette because we had seen people do that in the movies. It was the last time we'd see each other. Devin went off to college in the Air Force. I went off the rails and ran away from home, but we stayed in touch for a pretty long while. He had always been so unsentimental with me until after that final meeting, and then every so often I'd get an email from him saying how I knew him better than anyone else.
Thank you so much, Crystal. Let's give her another round of applause. Yeah. And our last reader before a very brief intermission is going to be Dimitri.
All right. So let me find this thing.
And feel free to adjust my 15
feet. Yeah, but let's see.
Until you start reading.
Good deal. All right.
So this is an excerpt from a longer thing that I'm working on. I hate dust jackets. They're the wrapping paper we forget to throw away after buying a book. Shiny and covered with dumb ad copy. Embarrassing, like a dog in a sweater. Thousands of empty calories. Can you imagine trying to preserve the structural integrity of shrink wrap from a pork chop after ripping it open? When I get a hardcover, the first thing I do is remove the dust jacket and throw it somewhere away from my field of vision. No blurbs, no bios, nothing the writer didn't intend to be there. Now I can read the book in peace. A couple years ago, while rereading Don DeLillo's Underworld, I made a big decision. Rather than put the dust jacket back on when I was done, I cut it up and used the fragments for collage. This accomplished a couple of things at once. It made a useless thing potentially useful, and it guaranteed I couldn't resell the book for anything worth bothering about. Unlike me, resellers of books think a dust jacket adds value. Lacking one, a hardback will fetch considerably less than the negligible amount they might otherwise pay out. Removing a dust jacket changes the commercial aspect of the book as a product. Without it, a book stops looking like what fills most bookstores and online portals. Now it's a one or two color block in muted tones, made of cardboard and cloth, with a few words on the spine and maybe a small embossed design on the front. It looks like something from another age, because that's what it now is. Without the garish camouflage, it's a quiet relic that belies the fact that reading is nothing like watching NASCAR or staring at billboards. That dumb jacket is like a thrift store tuxedo a shy kid feels pressured to wear to the prom. Last week, I took a good look at my bookshelf. I was thinking of culling the collection again, but instead, I started stripping the books of their jackets. Almost immediately, I liked the look of the whole thing much, much better. The more jackets I threw on the floor, the better it looked. When I was through, I gathered them together and stuffed them into a bin for collage fodder. I know that now the store won't want them. I'll still probably give them away sooner or later, just not for money. Without the party clothes, maybe a book can just be a gift from me to you. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Amita, for reading.